Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Andy Levy, former Fox News and CNN HLN guy and current cable news conscientious objector. I'm a former libertarian who now sits comfortably on the left.
Hi, I'm Danielle Moody, former educator and recovering lobbyist. But today, I'm an unapologetic woke commentator on America's threats to democracy.
And I'm producer Jesse Cannon, and I'm here to make sure things don't go too far off the rails.
We're here to have fun, smart conversations with some of the most knowledgeable and entertaining people in politics, media, and beyond.
Our goal is to try and make sense of our current crazy world, our new abnormal, and hopefully even make you laugh through the tears.
Welcome back to another bonus episode of The New Abnormal, and we thank you so much for being here. Today we have an extra special guest and Brazilian journalist, Adriana Cajanca, who's here to talk about her new book, Soul by Soul, The Evangelical Mission to Spread the Gospel to Muslims. But first, let's have some fun.
Are you guys ready to listen to some clips?
Not really, but clips.
I have to tell you, with what we got today, I really don't blame you for the
apathy. All right. Well, anyway, clips.
So former President Trump, kind of known to occasionally be funny, but this one I don't think was intentional, but I was cackling.
And I think we have a big chance of winning New York. We're going to give it a big play. We're going to the South Bronx to do a rally. We're going to be doing a rally at Madison Square Garden, we believe.
Is Madison Square Garden in the South Bronx? Did he move it?
You know, we have a long history in New York of naming party places after other New York monuments. I went to a lot of shows at a Shea Stadium that wasn't Shea Stadium. I could see that being a possibility.
Oh, okay.
Well, look, famously in 1939, there was a Nazi rally at Madison Square Garden.
Which his pappy attended.
Yeah. So why not? I mean, the history is there. I mean, the fact that he says he thinks they have a serious chance of winning New York. I mean, that was the funniest.
That was the first joke.
Yeah, that was the funniest part of all of it. But, well, maybe going to the South Bronx, that's pretty funny, too.
Mm-mm.
Did either of you attend the RNC protests when it was in New York?
No.
No.
I'm just envisioning, that wasn't a pretty scene those days. Watching my friends get beaten brutally by cops. Can you imagine MAGAs walking through the South Bronx? And also how few will attend.
I gotta tell you, I'd love to fucking see it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would buy tickets for it, you know? Like, so, I mean, by all means. It's always funny to me when these motherfuckers want to hold like these rallies, they do so in the whitest of places. Bring your hot shit to the people's doorstep that you're talking about. Bring it.
A certain relative of mine just this weekend would not come into New York City because they watched too much Fox News. So we had to meet them at the American Dream Mall in New Jersey. And I imagine a lot of MAGAs have heard a lot about the South Bronx. And after watching Fox News, I don't see them attending.
You know, Donald Trump is alluring, though. They'll run up to the Old Navy, get their flag shirts, their tiki torches from Party City, and just head on over. You never know.
Oh, boy.
Well, now I'm going to enter my plea for sympathy as producer of the show, because it's hard to keep the writing original when the same people say the dumbest shit week to week. Can I give you two one guess which show we're going to play a clip from?
Your best friend.
Well, my best friend.
All right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's either Jesse Waters' show or The Five.
It's The Five.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
It is also Jesse Waters on The Five, so.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Oh, dear God.
And they caught him. They trapped him in a cage. We call it a courtroom, but it's a cage. And he's like King Kong. And they're sending Maddow down there, and she's looking at him like an animal. She's like, oh, man, his hair is really orange. Look at his eyes. Look at his lips. He's angry. He's mad. He's upset. Watching him. They're not providing any sort of legal analysis. Joy Reid went down there. He's like, well, he's bigger than I thought he was. I mean, they're acting like it's like a zoo creature. And what happens with King Kong? You remember? Boom. It's not going to be good. So he's going to bust out of this cage eventually. They're not going to be able to keep him down.
They kill King Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He took a white woman on top of a building and it was frowned upon in the 40s.
I don't think...
that was a.
Oh, shit. And you know what happened to King Kong. You don't know what the fuck happened to King Kong, dummy.
Oh, he's so deliciously stupid.
When you're getting corrected by Tyrus.
Oh, my God.
It's a bad day in your career. Oh, which is really saying something for him.
Oh, my God.
That was amazing. That was honestly like, he's like, oh my God, they're looking at him like a zoo animal. Like now a courtroom is a cage and he's an animal. Like they're so fucking fragile. Like the victimization, it's like they want to be both tough and then like the flakiest of fucking flaky people. It's wild to me. Oh, poor Donald Trump. People are looking at him. He's made an entire career of look at me, look at me, look at me.
Dehumanizing people is the bread, which also funny enough, what did Jesse Waters get his start in television doing? Oh, he was Bill O'Reilly's guy who would go out and do racist segments where he literally looked at people of color like they were animals. All right. Well, I'm going to admit I haven't kept surveillance on former heads of the RNC and DNC's press hits during their tenure, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Rens Priebus and Howard Dean were not doing press hits like this one Lara Trump did on Alex Stein's show.
Get back to Laura. We got to end this correctly. Okay, Laura, you've been a great sport. And I just, this last question, your father-in-law, he used to go on the show called The Howard Stern Show a lot. And Howard Stern sucks now. And I got in trouble by a few of the executives here. We had a wholesome Christian comedian. Her name is Hannah Cruz. She has a big TikTok and she has a great, lovely family, kids and everything. And I wasn't thinking, and this is a free speech network, so I don't ever want to censor our guests or you. I asked her if it was okay if you're married to have anal sex. And that was a big deal. I asked that because I said, is that legal? And I would never, I just want to say, Laura, I would never ask you a disgusting question like
that. You never ask me something like
that. I would never say anything like that. This is a free speech. If you have it, you know, if you want to say, if you want to give your opinion on it, you're welcome. But I would never ask you anything about that.
Hold on. I have a question. Is it legal to do?
Yeah, well, you know, they say sodomy is illegal now. Yeah, in the Bible. Is it legal in the Bible to do that? Like, with your husband, of course.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, once you are married, everything is legal, and everything that everyone enjoys, whatever it may be.
That's it, Laura! Oh my God, I love you! See, you're such a good sport, everything's legal. So my wife and her boyfriend, whatever they do, it's totally legal. But they're on a lot of drugs when they do that. So when they do drugs, that's legal too? Even though my wife and her boyfriend?
I mean, you know what? If they're in the confines of their own home and they're not hurting anyone else, maybe you should just let them do what they want. But then when you come home, kick them out, obviously.
What the hell did I just listen to?
Like, literally, Andy, you just beat me to. I was going to utter the same thing. Jesse, what the fuck did you just make us listen to?
When I found this today, I was like, can I even put this on the show? This is so demented. And then I was like, no, we have to show the people who these people are.
What the actual fuck did I just listen to?
One of the other things I appreciate is I couldn't find how long this she was on this broadcast, but they were still calling her by the wrong name, which everyone does, calling her Laura instead of Lara.
Yeah, I was actually wondering if I've been mispronouncing it all this time.
No.
I have never heard of Alex Stein before this, but
that was horrific. Like, I need a pay increase for that. Like, that was on somebody's air?
You know what I kept thinking of is the famous Paul Joseph Watson tweet that says the left is very worried because the right is getting learning humor. If that's the right learning humor and edginess, I'm really not scared.
Yeah. He should ask her about pegging.
Shit. Oh, my God. Are we canceled? Like, are we allowed to say this? I don't think so.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, now we're going to take a much darker turn after the fun we've had. So I don't often put trigger warnings in the clips, but at this point, if you're triggered by domestic violence, I would skip to the interview portion of the show. Anyway, I think this is important because here we have white nationalist, racist, child virgin incel Nick Fuentes, who you may remember from having dinner with Donald Trump and Kanye and hanging out with Paul Gosar and Marjorie Taylor Greene. He's going to tell us what he thinks would make America great again.
These toughest guys, or those that pretend to be the most tough or the most masculine, they've got their dumb bitch wife right behind him in their ear. And we both know that guy is never going to punch her in the face. He's never going to kill her. It's just like the woman knows that's not even in the cards. It's not in the deck. Okay. She's going to open up that pack of cards and it's not in there. 0% chance. Okay. It's never going to happen. He's never going to cheat. There's no rape. There's no actually male power coming from the man. Like, the man is not a beast. The man is not an animal. He doesn't have power because he would never abuse whatever power that he has, and therefore he doesn't have it. And so because the woman knows the man totally, doesn't fear him, is completely comfortable and kind of bored with him, she doesn't ever really respect him. And that's when the power dynamic, I think, changes.
Again, what the fuck did I just listen to?
This is disgusting.
Yeah.
Honestly, the fact that that this is even on anyone's airwave, and I say this all the time, I'm not a lawyer, but like, how are you promoting domestic violence? How are you promoting murder and rape, and there is no FCC charge? How are you able to just go unregulated to the point where there have been mass shootings that have been executed by these incel type of men against women in this country? And this is what they are listening to and just allowed to, because what? Like, this is the protective freedom of speech that we do here? That was beyond anything that I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to that. I don't even want to make a joke because that's just so fucking gross.
So I have the benefit of having the visual of this. Is his background is a fake skyline of New York, as if he's broadcasting from one of the high towers that Fox and MSNBC broadcast from? And the funny thing about these people is that they are always cosplaying tough, because honestly, no one would recognize him as it is, because no one pays attention to this fucking loser. But if he ever was walking the streets of New York and people knew what he said and these beliefs, it wouldn't go well for him.
No, I wouldn't think so. It's hard to believe he's an incel.
I should also say the context of what was happening there before is he was extolling that he is a more tough guy than other men because he doesn't have a woman in his life.
Oh.
He's never going to have a woman in his life. He's not going to have a fucking, like, AI in his life. Do you understand? Like, not even a fucking hologram wants that piece of shit. Like, so he don't have to worry. There's nothing, no bit of fucking worry here that this man needs to have.
Danielle, you just gave me the best idea for a sequel to the movie Her.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Not him.
Yes, not in where Scarlett Johansson goes, I can't even fucking do this and I'm a robot.
Yep. Mm-mm.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, there's something I've really been needing to get off of my chest lately, which is that everyone and their mother should listen to the Andre 3000 album because it lifts my spirits on a regular basis, 1000%. We all carry around different problems, big and small. And let's be honest, when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It's like this safe space where you can unload all those burdens and start figuring out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
Therapy can make a difference. I know this from firsthand experience, and it's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's for anyone who wants to improve their mental well-being. Therapy can help you learn coping skills. It can teach you how to set better boundaries, and it can make you be a better version of yourself.
If you're considering therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, which means it's convenient, flexible, and fits into your schedule seamlessly. Plus, getting started is as easy as filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And the best part? You can switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. So why wait? Take that first step towards a happier, healthier you with BetterHelp.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/thenewabnormal today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/thenewabnormal.
Folks, I am very happy to welcome to the New Abnormal Brazilian journalist and the author of Soul by Soul, the Evangelical Mission to Spread the Gospel to Muslims, Adriana Kahanka.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I think that we are all aware for, I mean, must be centuries, must be thousands of years at this point, of the idea and the concept of missionaries, of Christians going around the world into different parts of the world to spread, quote unquote, the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for so long, it had been characterized as goodwill. We just want to spread the word. Talk to us about what you are reporting on in this book, Soul by Soul, and why it needs to be something that is on our radars.
Yeah, like as you said, it has been on for millennium, right? More than a millennium, more than two millennia. The first missionaries were actually the apostles, right? Who started spreading the messages that they believed to have learned from Jesus, from the Son of God. And they started spreading that in different directions. And sometimes we have an idea of Christianity as a homogeneous movement, but it has never been. It has always been a very ethnically diverse movement. So even the apostles, they went in different directions and they preached to different groups of people in the Middle East at the time who spoke different languages, and there were not a church at the time, right? It was just these people who had heard Jesus and started spreading the word. And for 300 years, it was like that. It's like just the people sharing this message. And of course, the message was shared with different aspects, with different understanding. So you have, like, in very early in Christianity, councils that were organized to decide on what directions the religion was going, because there were actually disagreement about the message spread. So that was for the next 300 years, until in Rome, the emperor became a Christian himself, and then allowed Christianity to spread throughout the empire and to the West. And then you have, in parallel to that, the rise of Islam in the Middle East. So you have a religion that starts in the Middle East but moves Western and becomes very much linked with that advance of Western power, Europe, and then the U.S. It was brought to the U.S. by the Puritans, right, who were descendants of the Anglican Church in England, and they thought to reform that church. They couldn't reform the church as they wished it, so they came here to the U.S. actually with the idea of founding this godly commonwealth. It was pretty much a missionary enterprise from the beginning. And then you have, in parallel to the advance of the United States as a superpower, the advance of the missionary movement as well, because those things are linked together.
Talk to us about how and why they're linked together, right? Because what this really comes down to, as I understand it, and you please correct me if I'm wrong, is about power. When we're talking about initially, let's say colonialism. You're talking about manifest destiny. You're talking about land grabs, exactly. Right? And the expansion of land. But in the way that you're discussing this, this isn't necessarily about land. It's about people. It's about masses of people. And when you look at the numbers, Christians don't have the same numbers that Muslims do. Islam has billions of people. So talk to me about the power and how that is interlinked.
So if you look at the beginning of the missionary movement in the U.S., it was really following basically U.S. diplomats and troops, wherever they would go, missionaries would go with them. Sometimes U.S. foreign policy benefited from missionaries because they are on the ground, you know, they relate to people, they are among the people. Sometimes it was the other way around, or most of the time the other way around, because if you think of, you know, the U.S. advancing territorially, these missionaries were under the protection of the power that was advancing. And this happened in Europe as well, right? So the first missionaries went to Egypt under the British rule, or to Pakistan, or those areas, to India, right? The former British Raj, that's when the first missionaries arrived there. It's difficult to detangle the expansion of Western power from Christianity, you know? Just as it's also difficult to detangle, to separate the advance of Islam from the oil countries like Saudi Arabia, because those are the countries that are financing missions. And Islam and Christianity are basically the two missionary religions. Christianity was born out of mission. It's a central character of Christianity since its beginning. In Islam, you have sectors of Islam that are missionary, like the Wahhabi line of Islam, who that was born in Saudi Arabia, is highly missionary. So they finance the building of mosques across the Muslim world, or even in Europe, the sending of pastors. Al-Ahram University in Egypt also does that. In more modern times, as Saudi Arabia and Iran began fighting for the control, the narrative and the culture and the power in the Middle East, those are two countries that both are Islamic, but they follow different lines of Islam. One is Sunni, the other is Shia. And when they began their fight for souls, if you will, began to intensify, they both started financing mosques, and, you know, later we saw in Iraq and Syria, even armed groups. And so Christianity is more or less the same. If you think of the U.S. as a superpower, the rise of U.S. as a superpower was seen by Protestants as a sign of God's power, God's choosing them. Mm-hmm. The Puritans, actually, they thought they were God's chosen people to build this kingdom of God here. So it's interesting that the U.S. was, although there is a diversity, a plurality of religion in the country, the U.S. was born out of a missionary enterprise, which was the Puritan coming here and wanting to build this New Jerusalem, if you will. And the advance of the U.S. Happened in parallel to the advance of America as a superpower. And then you have a turning point in beginning in the 19th century. Then you can mention, you know, technology, the advance of technology, the advance of transport, who allowed these people to really reach out to the entire world. And then you began what we call the modern missionary movement, which has this turning point, this watershed moment, which is 1974, when Billy Graham convened a conference in world evangelization in Lausanne, and Lausanne in Switzerland. Why Lausanne? Probably because it was closer to the headquarters of the World Council of Churches. And you began in that moment what we call the modern missionary movement, that was basically led by evangelicals. who are the majority today among the Protestants. The World Council of Churches was a more left-leaning organization. So you see during the Cold War, the World Council of Churches, they embraced revolution in Latin America. They embraced this very left-wing movement in Latin America that was headed by priests. That's called the liberation theology. That happened in the Cold War. So Billy Graham started to see this division among, you know, conservative and liberals, and he wanted to unite everybody under his own tent, which is evangelical and conservative. And then he convened this first major move congress in Lausanne. And from there, if you look at that moment in Brazil, for example, which is the largest Catholic country in the world and the largest country in Latin America, at the time, Brazil had 36 missionaries. Now, Brazil is the second largest sending country of missionaries to the world, behind only the U.S.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, and that's the moment, the turning point was exactly there. It's interesting how Christianity made a journey across the world. So it begins in the Middle East. It was officialized, if you will, in Rome, in Europe. It comes to the New World mm-hmm. with the Puritans. And then you have the first clash of religions within Christianity, which is the North America evangelical, majority evangelical, Protestant and evangelical. And you have the South, the largest Catholic stronghold in the world, the Catholic missionaries, the Jesuits, began arriving in South America in 1500.
Let me ask you this about where we are in the present day, where you follow two newly, right, I guess, converted people, missionaries, who are, right, Brazilians, Luiz and Gis, who are working in Afghanistan alongside two South Africans.
Right, and Nigerians and all.
Religion and politics and wealth and power are all intertwined. And what I find really interesting is the missionaries that are in these countries that have great conflict. And when the new refugees arrive, the rush to try and convert them. So can you kind of explain, like, I guess, the strategy that you uncovered in the profiles of these people?
It all goes back to this watershed moment in 1974, where evangelical leaders from around the globe meet for the first time, and perhaps for the first time, they have a true sense of a global family. You know, as they call it, the global body of Christ. So you have this massive wave of evangelicals going to Latin America and to some extent to Africa and converting these people to evangelicalism. And then their goal is to convert the whole world. And the way they see it, you mentioned how they go to these vulnerable places. The way evangelicals see that is that vulnerability, war, and poverty has a single reason, and that is not knowing Jesus. That's how they see it. I'm not saying that I agree. I'm a secular journalist, so I'm not saying that I agree with it, but that's how they see it. So you have this Argentinian strategist who lives in the U.S., Luis Bush, who organized, crisscrossed data about poverty and war in the world and the groups that hadn't heard from the gospel, hadn't heard the gospel yet. And what appeared in his computer was this window. That was back in 89. It was this window that they called the 1040 window, the 10th parallel and between the 10th parallel and the 4th parallel, where the majority of Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus live, and also the majority of the poor. So the way they came to frame a mission was that you are saving these people from war and poverty by converting them to Christianity. And then you have a move, a turn to the East to convert the Muslim people, especially after the Cold War, because before the Cold War, they were concentrated in communist countries. After the Cold War, they turn East to convert Muslims. And then you have 9/11. And what happened after 9/11 was that the fields became too dangerous for American missionaries. This same man, Louis Bush, at a conference of the Lausanne movement said, well, we have this massive number of people in Latin America and Africa who could go in our place. So instead of continuing sending American missionaries to the Muslim world, they started equipping, training, financing, mobilizing these army, if you will, to fight for souls in their place. And that's the reason why Brazilians became the second sending country of missionaries. And you have Colombia and Mexico among the five largest sending countries. So they went to fight for souls because it was too dangerous for America, especially Americans, especially after the Iraq and the Afghan wars. But the movement is financed largely still by the U.S.
Your book, and this has been incredibly riveting, because I think, again, what it goes to show you is that the push for power really comes back to the numbers and really comes back to the masses and what areas, I personally say, I'm not saying that you're saying this, but I'm saying where there may be vulnerabilities, there may be areas of duress and war and upheaval. And it's almost, you know, I will say, because we have to leave it here today, is incredibly opportunistic, but it's all intertwined into the push of what encases a superpower. And I think that your book really lays that out. And I'm really thankful that you came on the show today to give us some insight. I really appreciate your time today, Adriana.
Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoy checking out this episode of The New Abnormal. We're back every Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday.
If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend and keep the conversation going. This podcast is a Daily Beast production with production by Jesse Cannon and Seamus Calder.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.